Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. Today on Class Matters, we're continuing with a two-part series in which we've been sharing with you an open letter written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of Children's Health Defense, and you can find it at the Children's Health Defense website, that is addressed to the members of the committee that was considering the approval of the so-called COVID vaccine, the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. This letter was written on June 10th, and of course, the approval of the so-called vaccines for children under five kind of sailed through that committee as well as through the FDA and is now being approved. By the way, I don't think I mentioned last week that one of the, shall we say, peculiar aspects of this is that the Biden administration went ahead and ordered millions and millions of doses of this vaccine for children under five before it was even approved.
Well, wow, I wonder how they knew.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that, biological products? Was the vaccine part always called vaccines and other biological products? Or is that something new when they brought out the GMO products?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. But
because
in any
you
event,
can't really call it a vaccine if it doesn't prevent the disease that you're vaccinating against.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a long-held knowledge that the point of vaccines is to prevent disease.
Right.
And we already know these don't.
No, and as a matter of fact, it turns out over the long term, they tend to have negative effects, which is part of what we're going to get into today.
Yeah. If you take enough of them, you're more apt to get the disease. That's the worst vaccine ever.
Yeah, well, basically it appears that the function of this advisory committee is to advise so-called regulatory agencies that they should just approve these vaccines and other drugs. But in any event, this was part of an effort by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to try to stop that by citing to all of the science. And this is really the overarching message here that we want to convey. Under modern class ruled society, we have not only this phenomenon of regulatory capture in which the regulatory agencies that are supposed to be protecting the public good have been captured by profiteering interests that just want to sell more of these medical products, regardless of the actual real-world consequences. And that's exactly what we're seeing now, writ large, in the case of the so-called COVID vaccines.
I think they're still going through the forms. So it's like the EPA, when they're going to do something that harms the environment, they have hearings. We've been to those before. And everyone comes and says, no, we don't want you to destroy our water. And they go, thank you very much. We'll take it under advisement. Boom, approved.
Yeah.
So that's how this is too. You can give your comments. You can say, I don't think we ought to kill off little kids. Children are our future. And they're like, thank you very much. We'll keep that under advisement. Boom, approved.
Yeah. So this is part of the reason we're sharing this is the line you get from the corporate media is, well, they're just following the science. Well, no, they're not following the science. And one of the remarkable things about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s letter here, as with some of the other sources we cite, is dozens and dozens of peer-reviewed studies that actually show the data about what actually happens when you take the vaccine, the so-called vaccine. And it's just being ignored. It's being swept under the rug.
Well, they just redefine words.
Well, that's part of what they're doing, yes.
Yeah,
that's one aspect of it. So anyway, this June 10th letter, which you can get at the Children's Health Defense website, last week we had gotten through the first 15 reasons, all well-sourced by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as to why they should not approve this vaccine for very young children. And now we're going to continue with reason number 16 and probably get through this. And then we have a couple other things to share with you, depending on how much time we have.
We should share Robert F. Kennedy, the original one, his speech in 1967, where he gave a speech saying, what is GDP?
Right.
You know, it only measures economic things. Like if there's a multi-car crash on the freeway, well, then that's good for the GDP because all those ambulances get paid and the hospital gets paid and the people, if they survive, have to buy new cars. If they don't survive, well, you know, the funeral,
right.
You know, lots of money is generated from this. But he says one thing that the GDP does not measure is the health of our children or the strength of our marriages or the happiness, right?
Right.
The health of our children. No, the health of our children is not measured in the GDP, but injecting them with experimental products, that makes the GDP go up.
Yes, it does. Yes, by billions of dollars, as it turns out. So continuing with reason number 16 in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s letter, an important Cell article written by scientists from Stanford has shown that based on lymph node sampling after mRNA vaccination, spike protein and its mRNA remain present in the germinal centers of draining lymph nodes for up to 60 days, which is when the sampling ceased. This was not supposed to happen. The demonstration of vastly prolonged spike protein production has revealed that the dose of spike protein produced in vivo by mRNA vaccines is unpredictable. FDA, however, requires uniformity of dosing. That fact alone should disqualify all authorizations and approvals of mRNA COVID vaccines. Reason 17. The June 8, 2022 New York Times reveals that the most vaccinated regions in the U.S. and the world are also those regions with the highest current case counts. This provides additional supportive evidence that several months after being vaccinated, efficacy becomes negative, and vaccination increases the likelihood of developing a COVID infection.
And the FDA knows this, and they approved it anyhow.
Yeah, yeah. And in that regard, I want to share with you a little bit, kind of shift gears just briefly, at the website, Who is Robert Malone? Robert Malone, MD at Substack.com. He's got a lot of great material there, including recently a two-parter that goes into that very phenomenon. And he points out all the recent spate of celebrities like Dr. Anthony Fauci himself, despite having received four doses of the inoculation, he was infected and developed COVID disease in mid-June.
Well,
the same is true of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and California Governor Gavin Newsom. And then he cites a whole raft of peer-reviewed studies that basically point out that not only the infection rate, but the hospitalization rate and the death rate after a few months. I mean, there is, I guess, some increased protection maybe for the first couple months after you get a vaccination. But after that, the effect becomes negative and people who become vaccinated are actually showing less protection. But are you hearing about this in the news? No, this is not something that you get from the corporate.
It attacks your innate immune system.
Yeah.
This mRNA.
Fewer T cells being produced, fewer antigens being produced. It's all coming out in these studies, but of course, it's not being covered at all by the corporate media in this country. Continuing with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s letter, 3 weeks ago, FDA authorized booster doses of Pfizer vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds without convening a VRBPAC meeting or providing any public discussion of the evidence supporting the booster. Dr. Peter Marks, the director of FDA's Center for Biologics, told the VRBAC in April that the FDA's issuance of an emergency use authorization for a second booster in adults was a stopgap measure, the implication being that there was no scientific evidence to support that booster. Has FDA given up even the appearance of a scientific evaluation before issuing more EUAs for COVID vaccines?
Sure seems like it.
Yes, indeed. Reason number 19. It is well known that hospitalizations and deaths with COVID have been misattributed as hospitalizations and deaths due to COVID by federal health agencies, leading to numbers of severe cases and deaths that have been disputed by U.S. physicians investigating them and which do not accord with the mortality rates for children in other nations. CDC now publishes its COVID mortality data as deaths with COVID blatantly exaggerating COVID-caused morbidity and mortality. And this has been true all along. This has been part of the fudging of the data, misreporting of the data. As you pointed out last week, if you're in a car crash and you go to the hospital and you die, and they test you, oh, you had COVID. Well,
they test everyone for COVID. It's part of the law. Actually, the head of the health department in Illinois pointed that out way back, I believe, in 2020. Yes. I don't know if she still has her job, but she just pointed out. She's like, well, it makes it look like more, because what we're doing here is we are saying anyone that has COVID, if they die within 30 days of a positive test, is said to have died of COVID, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily died of COVID.
Right.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly.
She said that out loud.
Yes. Reason number 20. According to CDC and the New York Times, it has been over 3 months since February 28, 2022, during which there has been fewer than one U.S. child per 100,000 children hospitalized daily for COVID. In other words, virtually no children are being hospitalized for COVID.
That was before also.
Yeah. Reason 21, according to the CDC data tracker, less than 0.1% of all U.S. deaths that have occurred with COVID have occurred in children aged 0 through 4. Reason 22, strong evidence that newer variants of COVID-19, Omicron, pose dramatically reduced risk to young children was published on April 1st, 2022 in JAMA Pediatrics by Wang et al. Using a huge U.S. medical database, they were able to match children aged under 5 who were infected with an Omicron variant with those who were infected with a Delta variant. Children with Omicron were only 35% as likely to require an ICU admission and only 15% as likely to require mechanical ventilation as same-age children who had been sick due to earlier Delta variants.
And then remember when Delta was first introduced into the United States in the middle of summer? Mm-hmm. And that was back when they were trying to get the emergency use authorization for children, I think, 5 to 16.
Right.
They exaggerated the children that were sick with Delta by putting children who were sick with RSV. They said that that was Delta. And there was a couple of hospitals in the South that had to come out and say, no, we don't have any kids with COVID. We have kids with RSV. So, yeah, they lied because they wanted to scare people into vaccinating their children back in 2021.
Yeah.
And now they're going for the little ones. Now they're going for the babies.
Yeah. Reason 23. The original Moderna clinical trial data, which should have been available to regulatory agencies at least since the Moderna package was presented for licensure, reveals that while 93% of unvaccinated controls produced detectable SARS-CoV-2 antinucleocapsid antibody after infection, only 40% of the vaccinated produced this antibody after infection. Most of the vaccinated failed to mount the expected immune response. And this, again, there's more of that kind of data at the Robert Malone website. This is probably why Dr. Marco Cavalleri of the European Medicines Agency warned that frequent COVID-19 booster shots could adversely affect the immune response and may not be feasible. Repeat booster doses every 4 months could eventually weaken the immune response and tire out people, according to the European Medicines Agency. It is probable that the more doses of these vaccines you receive, the less broad immunity you will develop even after getting infected. Why subject children to the long-term risk of damaging their immunity to coronaviruses by authorizing vaccines for the youngest children?
Well, damaging their immune systems, period, really, is what it comes
in. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it weakens the immune response, but you know what it does to the profit of Pfizer and Moderna?
Yeah.
It really increases those.
Yes, yes, it's the profit response they're interested in.
Yeah, it's quite strengthened.
Reason 24. Below are the June 8th, 2022 New York Times graphs for the current number of U.S. patients in hospitals, ICUs, and suffering deaths attributed to COVID. The number of patients in ICUs and dying each day ascribed to COVID are close to the lowest numbers since the start of the pandemic. Given that CDC extrapolated that 95% of Americans already have partial to complete immunity, while we are at historic low levels for severe COVID disease, it should be clear that there is no need to vaccinate anyone now. And then he reproduces the charts.
Right. As he pointed out last week, it's something like 75 to 80% of children in the United States are already immune. They've already had it.
Yeah.
That's how kids are. They always got snotty noses. Everyone used to know that.
Yeah, so why give them a shot that will only result in weakening their immune system? Reason 25. The CDC says vaccine licensing is a lengthy process that can take 10 years or longer. Yet FDA has managed to compress this into mere months by omitting most of the preclinical requirements, overlapping the phase 1 to 3 trials, using so few pediatric subjects that serious safety issues are missed, and failing to review the vast majority of phase 4 safety and efficacy data available to it in FDA's best databases and elsewhere. Under what authority has FDA jettisoned 50 years of vaccine regulatory science and standards to compress a 10-year process into only months?
That 2005 law that they passed after the bioweapon anthrax was released. Because that makes sense.
Yeah. And finally, reason 26. Walgreens pharmacies perform rapid antigen COVID tests and report weekly on the results, based on the number of vaccine doses received and the date the most recent vaccination was obtained. The results reveal that receiving a second or third dose within the past 5 months leads to a comparable positivity rate as being unvaccinated. However, receiving two or three doses more than 5 months ago leads to the highest positivity rates. This is further supportive evidence that efficacy falls into negative territory several months after vaccination. So basically, what he's saying here is that you get vaccinated with your second or third or whatever dose, it doesn't give you more protection, even in the short term. And after a few months, it actually gives you less protection than if you just went unvaccinated.
So for a while, Scotland was putting out very good numbers. They were keeping track and they were putting out good numbers, as opposed to the United States and, say, the rest of Great Britain, right, who were hiding the number. But Scotland and Israel were putting out numbers, and then Scotland stopped putting out the numbers. And the reason they gave was because anti-vaxxers are using our data to prove that the vaccines aren't working. Wait. You're going to hide scientific data because the conclusions people are drawing are unprofitable? You know, that is not how you do science.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Ideally, anyhow. So Scotland quit doing it. Israel still is putting out some good research. They're the only ones at this point where you can get unbiased research, it seems, except for, it looks like, Walgreens.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a wrap-up paragraph where he asked them to not approve the vaccine, but of course that fell on deaf ears, apparently. And then attached to his letter, he does have basically a series of slides and so on from the U.S. FDA reminding them of what the actual criteria for emergency use authorization is, and shows how it was not met here.
Well, one of the things that the 2005 law said was that if there was effective treatment, that you could not approve an emergency vaccine. So if there was a way to treat the disease,
right,
you could not approve the vaccine in emergency use, because
why would you do that?
There's no reason to do that. So that is why they were outlawing the treatments. That is why they're outlawing them, banning any mention of them, censoring people who mention them, literally
removing the hospital privileges of doctors who prescribe ivermectin or the other
literally
treatments.
Threatening the medical licenses of doctors who prescribed it or the pharmaceutical licenses of pharmacies who dispensed it.
Right.
They literally threatened them, because if there was effective treatment, they couldn't issue the emergency use authorization.
Right.
But here's the thing. They have now found that they can get away with, well, murder, but also with going against their own laws. Because then what they did was they approved a treatment for COVID, right?
Right.
Under the Emergency Use Act. Okay, well, now that means if you're saying that you now have a treatment, then that means that the emergency use of the vaccines are no longer legal. You can't have both.
Right.
Because according to the law, if you have a treatment, you can't have the vaccine. So then they released the treatment and they didn't backtrack on the vaccine. As a matter of fact, they just said, now you're going to give it to kids. This is blatantly illegal under the very law they are using to approve all this. It's illegal.
Yeah.
And they're doing it anyhow, because you know what? They're getting away with it.
Yeah.
Because Americans are so brain dead or something, or I don't know what's wrong with them. From 2001 with the anthrax attacks to 2020 with the COVID pandemic, Americans should have been focused laser-like on shut down the bioweapons lab. Quit taking regular diseases and making them more lethal. Quit taking regular diseases and making them more transmissible. This is unconscionable. This is illegal. Because we signed a treaty in 1972 saying we weren't going to do it.
Right.
Another way where they're just blatantly ignoring the law.
Yeah.
They signed a treaty that makes it the law of the land according to the Constitution. They're ignoring it.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to rationalize it by saying it's for purely defensive purposes, but that's not really valid. In any event, this is a nice segue into what I wanted to talk about, getting back to this whole idea of regulatory capture and to give you an idea of how bad it is. I wanted to share with you a part of a series of articles by Rebecca Strong, who also writes at Substack. She's got a Substack page called Down the Rabbit Hole. And you can also find this at Dr. Aaron Cariarty's Substack, Human Flourishing, which is also highly recommended. Dr. Cariarty is one of the brave doctors who is speaking out along with Dr. Robert Malone and some of the others we've talked about. Anyway, Rebecca Strong has done a series of articles called Putting Big Pharma on Trial in the COVID-19 Era. And what I wanted to share with you, this came out in April. This is part three of the series, and this is most relevant to this particular topic. Part three is entitled Backing the Big Four, Big Pharma and the FDA, WHO, NIH, CDC. Rebecca Strong starts out, I know what you're thinking. Big Pharma is amoral, and the FDA's devastating slips are a dime a dozen, old news. But what about the agencies and organizations like the National Institutes of Health, World Health Organization, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC? Don't they have an obligation to provide unbiased guidance to protect citizens?
Yes, they do.
Yes. The WHO's guidance is undeniably influential across the globe. For most of this organization's history, dating back to 1948, it could not receive donations from pharmaceutical companies, only member states.
Well, duh.
But that changed in 2005 when the WHO updated its financial policy to permit private money into its system. Since then, the WHO has accepted many financial contributions from Big Pharma. In fact, it's only 24% financed by member states today, with a whopping 80% of financing coming from private donors. For instance, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is now one of its main contributors, providing up to 13% of its funds, nearly $250 to $300 million a year. Nowadays, the foundation provides more donations to the WHO than the entire United States. Dr. Arata Kochi, former head of WHO's malaria program, expressed concern to Director General Dr. Margaret Chan in 2007, that taking the foundation's money could have far-reaching, largely unintended consequences, including stifling a diversity of views among scientists. The big concerns are that the Gates Foundation isn't fully transparent and accountable, said Lawrence Gostin, director of WHO's Collaborating Center on National and Global Health Law.
You think?
By wielding such influence, it could steer WHO's priorities. It would enable a single rich philanthropist to set the global health agenda. Take a peek at the WHO's list of donors and you'll find a few other familiar names like AstraZeneca, Bayer, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Merck. The NIH has the same problem, it seems. Science journalist Paul Thacker, who previously examined financial links between physicians and pharma companies as a lead investigator of the United States Senate Committee, wrote in the Washington Post that this agency often ignored very obvious conflicts of interest. He also claimed that its industry ties go back decades. In 2018, for example, it was discovered that a $100 million alcohol consumption study run by NIH scientists was funded mostly by beer and liquor companies. Emails proved that NIH researchers were in frequent contact with those companies while designing the study, which, here's a shocker, were aimed at highlighting the benefits and not the risks of moderate drinking. So the NIH ultimately had to squash the trial. And then there's the CDC.
Wait, that doesn't follow. a conflict of interest was disclosed, so they had to stop the trial. Well, there's conflicts of interest now. That was 4 years ago. Look right. How bad it's gotten.
Right.
Conflicts of interest all over the place. Do they stop the trials? Nope.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they legalize the drug? Yep. It's gotten worse. Even in the last 2 years, it's gotten worse.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because of what I was just talking about with the EAU saying that if you have a treatment, you can't have the vaccine.
Right.
Well, they followed that right up until October of 2020, and then they just went poof, threw it out the window.
Yeah.
And now they completely ignore it. And that's only a year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as Americans obey and allow this kind of open criminality to go on, it will go on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then there's the CDC. It used to be that this agency couldn't take contributions from pharmaceutical companies, but in 1992, they found a loophole. New legislation passed by Congress allowed them to accept private funding through a nonprofit called the CDC Foundation. From 2014 through 2018 alone, the CDC Foundation received $79.6 million from corporations like Pfizer, Biogen, and Merck. Of course, if a pharmaceutical company wants to get drug, vaccine, or other product approved, they really need to cozy up to the FDA. That explains why, in 2017, pharma companies paid for a whopping 75% of the FDA's scientific review budgets, up from 27% in 1993. It wasn't always like this, but in 1992, an act of Congress changed the FDA's funding stream, enlisting pharma companies to pay user fees, which helped the FDA speed up the approval process for their drugs. A 2018 Science investigation, that's the magazine Science, found that 40 out of 107 physician advisors on the FDA's committees received more than $10,000 from big pharma companies trying to get their drugs approved, with some banking up to $1 million or more.
They won't let the pharma companies hand out pens to nurses anymore because
right.
of conflict of interest. But we can pay off the scientists that are approving the drugs.
Yeah.
No problem. Here's $1 million, dude.
Yeah, well, I guess they've discovered where to get the most bang for their buck.
I know. Handing out those pens didn't do anything.
Yeah. The FDA claims it has a well-functioning system to identify and prevent these possible conflicts of interest. Unfortunately, their system only works for spotting payments before advisory panels meet, and the Science investigation showed many FDA panel members get their payments after the fact.
Well, they want to make sure they did the right job.
Right. It's a little like you scratch my back now, and I'll scratch your back once I get what I want. Drug companies promise FDA employees a future bonus contingent on whether things go their way.
That's bribery.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how can
you... That's what it amounts to, yes. Yeah,
it's open bribery. But it's okay as long as you bribe after. As long as it's a payment and not a pre-bribe.
As long as it's a wink, wink.
Not a pre-bribe, a post-bribe.
Yeah. Here's why this dynamic proves problematic. A 2000 investigation revealed that when the FDA approved the rotavirus vaccine in 1998, it didn't exactly do its due diligence.
No, it killed a lot of kids, but not as many as this one's killing.
Yeah. That probably had something to do with the fact that committee members had financial ties to the manufacturer, Merck. Many owned tens of thousands of dollars of stock in the company or even held patents on the vaccine itself. Later, the adverse event reporting system revealed that the vaccine was causing serious bowel obstructions in some children, and it was finally pulled from the U.S. market in October 1999.
See, that's a difference. Again, 22 years ago, the rotavirus, first they approved it. It was already corrupt, so they approved it. But it killed a few kids, and they're like, okay, so we're pulling it. But guess what? They put out a new one later.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many kids it's killed, but you know what? They don't do that anymore.
That's right. Then in June of 2021, the FDA overruled concerns raised by its very own scientific advisory committee to approve Biogen's Alzheimer drug, Aduhelm, a move widely criticized by physicians. The drug not only showed very little efficacy, but also potentially serious side effects like brain bleeding and swelling in clinical trials. Dr. Aaron Kesselheim, a Harvard Medical School professor who was on the FDA's scientific advisory committee, called it the worst drug approval in recent history, at the time,
and
noted that meetings between the FDA and Biogen had a strange dynamic, suggesting an unusually close relationship. Anyway, it goes on in that vein. We won't have time to get into it, but she also gets into the conflict of interest between Dr. Anthony Fauci's NIAID, one of the institutes that comprises the NIH, and points out that the NIH owns half the patent for the Moderna vaccine, as well as thousands more pharma patents to boot.
And why is Fauci not in jail?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, there's a lot more to this. Again, this article, Putting Big Pharma on Trial in the COVID-19 Era, you can find at Rebecca Strong's Substack page entitled Down the Rabbit Hole. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.